You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound, folks. Welcome to the Roto Experts in the Morning. Saturday, March 18th. I'm Mike Blewett along with George Kurtz. We'll be here for the next 3 hours, and we're excited to get to talk today. I know anybody out there listening, today might be a rough day for you because yesterday was St. Patrick's Day, plus it was March Madness going on. A lot of people out in the city where I was yesterday, George. So I wish you a belated. I know you're of Irish heritage, as am I, so I wish you a belated happy St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, top of the morning to you, Mike.
Thanks, buddy. So, you do anything special yesterday? Cook up any special meals? Do anything noteworthy for your celebration yesterday?
Well, I am three-quarters Irish, but no, I'm not a big corned beef and hash guy. We did go out for a nice steak.
Attaboy. So, yeah, I celebrated a little bit with some friends, and it's always a nice excuse when it's St. Patrick's Day and the tournament is on. So I got to watch some games yesterday. I know you're not a big watcher of the tournament. And to date, it has not been there's been good games, but no big upsets. None of those big 15 seeds beating the 2 seeds. So I think it's going to heat up and the basketball is going to get pretty good here over the next couple of days. So any chance that you watched any games in the last 2 days, I'm going to say no.
Well, while I was having that steak, the games were on.
All right. Well, I'll take that. I'll take that as a win for you watching your share of college basketball for the season. But in any event, things have really heated up this month, George. We are obviously I'm doing a mock draft right now, as I'm going to have to put it on auto for the rest of the way. But things are heating up. Draft season, obviously, next week we're going to be in the middle of Tout Wars weekend, where we're going to have a lot of stuff scheduled with various guests over the course of next weekend. George and I will be here again, obviously, next Saturday and next Sunday to take you through some of those Tout Wars drafts and interview some of the people involved. So looking forward to that next weekend. But have you had any of your league drafts come up for this season? I know you're in a bunch, so curious if any of them have occurred yet or they're still waiting a little bit longer.
I'm actually trying to cut it down this year. I'm trying to keep it down to less than 5, see if that improves my performance if I don't have 8,000 leagues going on here. So, no, I have not had any live drafts right now. Right now, I think I've done a couple of mocks for Roto Experts, and we are in the middle of an AL-only mock for Roto Experts.
Yeah. Now, in your estimation, we talk about mixed leagues and as we're just trying to cover as many players as possible, but is there any slight change to strategy based on the fact that it's AL only for you, simply because there is wealth at a certain position or lack thereof at another?
For me, when you're in an only league, it's best player available. It doesn't matter anymore. I like to say I hate catchers, but in AL only, if Gary Sanchez is there, I'm grabbing him. Doesn't matter. But, you're going to be weak at certain positions, probably more than one. There's just not, in an only league, there just aren't enough players to go around. There's not. It's a 12-team AL-only league. I think we're in about round 9, round 10, and the pickings are already thin. You know, I still need a second, a shortstop, a third baser, a couple of outfielders, utility. I mean, it's just thin. You know, you're going to backups right now. So that's why early on, best player available. I do want to get a good mix of hitters and pitchers, but that's in old drafts here. But I'm no longer looking to stay away from catchers, you know, because I hate the position because I think they get hurt all the time. I just have to take the best player available because I need as many good players as possible. And it's the only leagues are the only leagues I care about where I draft. I want to draft high. I want as many good players as possible. Unfortunately, in this mock, I have the last pick, and it just puts you behind the 8-ball right away.
Yeah. So who was that pick for you in that 12-hole?
Who did I pick at the 12-hole? I'm going to have to look that up for you, Mike, because I don't know who I picked. Okay. I got Chris Sale. I went for the top, and I had the turn, so I got Chris Sale and George Springer.
I'll take that. I'd take that.
I wanted Corey Kluber, like, but Frank Stanfill, one of our esteemed producers, grabbed him before me.
Yeah, I feel like we've talked about Springer a lot during this spring, no pun intended, but in any event, I just feel like he's a good chance to outperform, but you and I have talked about the strikeouts are a huge concern. but I feel like he's a guy who may outperform and, you know, might provide a little bit more value than he's being drafted. I know he's not, it's not like he's sliding in drafts, but, you know, I think he's a guy that based on his skill set, maybe he can produce. I think the stolen bases are the real X factor there, right? We don't know exactly how much he's going to run. It seems like historically he's been cutting down, but then we read a couple of things this spring where maybe he is going to get the green light in certain situations. So, and I don't know if your thoughts have changed on Springer. I feel like we have talked about him a whole bunch.
Well, with Springer, I mean, his thoughts actually in spring training actually hurt his chances of running. He said he would only run if the situation calls for it. Now, what that seems to me is, hey, you know, ninth inning, you're down by a run, you lead off, you get on base, well, you're running to get in scoring position. Two outs, nobody on base, you're running to get in scoring position. It doesn't seem like he'll run just for the sake of running. A guy like Springer who's not, you know, we're not talking about Billy Hamilton or D. Gordon here. Guys are going to run liberally all the time. It's what they do. You know, they're going to take it easy with Springer. They're not going to want him to run eight. They don't want to risk injury there. A lot of teams don't like to risk outs. You know, if you don't steal, most teams, if you don't steal at an 80% success clip, they don't want you running. That's just the way it is. They those outs are precious. It's the money ball theory there. And I think also with Springer, you know, I don't think they want him just running just for the sake of running. You know, they want him to run with it when it needs to be. I like George Springer. Truly do. In mixed leagues, he'd be a more bottom second round, top third round guy here. Obviously, in an only league, he becomes a first round guy there. The power's there. Average is going to be, you know, we hope they can pick it up. But for George Springer, I like he can give you a little bit of everything, but I don't think he's going to be a 30-30 guy. Not even close.
Right. So that's good. We'll continue to take a look at George's team. We'll talk a little bit about my mock later. We'll cover a lot of baseball in the second hour when Matt Modica joins us. He's at CTM Baseball. By the way, George is at George Kurtz, and I'm at Mike Blewett. But hit us up today during the show at FNTSY Radio. If you'd like to give us a call, it's at 84-FNTSY. We're going to be here all the way till 10 o'clock, going over the entire world of sports, really focusing a lot on baseball and football today. As the free agency season continues to roll along, George, we saw a big deal yesterday out of New York where the Giants, who had tagged Jason Pierre-Paul, decided to utilize that tag and get a long-term deal done. He signs a four-year, $62 million deal with $40 million guaranteed. It was not a deal that I expected to see him get, but sure enough, Jason Pierre-Paul is going to be with the Giants for a long period of time.
Yeah, Giants are banking on that defensive line. I think it's $135 million tied up in that line. So that's a lot. It's a lot of cash there. Giants are going for it, and I don't blame them. You know, Eli Manning's got a very short shelf life of how long he's going to be able to play. I don't think he's elite anymore, but how long he can even play better than average. And you sign Brandon Marshall, who gave you pretty much a sweetheart deal there. That strengthens up the wide receivers. Only question for the Giants is the offensive line, right? And I guess the running game as well. But that offensive line, can it hold up? Can it protect Eli? And you saw Bob McAdoo pretty much tell Eli, deal with it. You know, get rid of the ball quicker. Make quicker decisions. Get rid of the, you know, do what you got to do. Line's not going to get any better. That seems to be what the Giants are telling him. I find that strange. But then again, there were no big-time offensive linemen on the market this year. You know, the draft's not going to be stock full of them, especially not where the Giants are picking there. So Eli may have to deal with it again. Get rid of that ball quicker.
Yeah, and you're right about the offensive line market. Those players that were available were scooped up quickly. And the Browns signed two, and the Vikings signed two. And there wasn't really too much to go around. This is a particularly weak draft for offensive line. And, you know, if you weren't one of those first couple of teams to plunk down money at that position, then you are out of luck. And it's just shuffling guys around that are, you know, sort of average offensive linemen. I think them having Eric Flowers, who's a previous top 10 draft pick, but clearly has not proven that he can play left tackle, if he can even play right tackle. He was an issue for them last year as one of the big weaknesses on the entire team. And unfortunately, he's very likely to be in that same position again. So as you said, Eli's going to have to deal with it. I think the Giants are still pretty strong. As you said, the Brandon Marshall deal really helped them from a monetary standpoint. It gave them flexibility to do a deal like this. I think Jonathan Hankins is still out there on the market. He's saying he wants $10 million annually, but considering Dontari Poe just signed a one-year $8 million deal with the Falcons, I don't think that money is out there for Hankins. So he might come back to the Giants on a relatively good deal, and that defensive line will be legit. From fantasy purposes, Jason Pierre-Paul isn't really a huge fantasy star in IDP leagues. He's an edge rusher. You know what you're going to get with those guys. It's peaks and valleys, right, George?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Someone brought a stat the other day, and this just tells you about how maybe how fickle sacks can be. But for all the, you know, the Giants that get a lot of pub about their defensive line, Cowboys didn't. Guess which line had more sacks? Cowboys did. So that tells you something there about, it's playing with numbers. Giants' defensive line is obviously better. It also may tell you that the Cowboys were ahead in more games, so teams were passing, therefore the Cowboys had more chances to sack the quarterback. But it just tells you something. Giants are an overall very – I mean, they're a tough line to run against, tough line to pass against. They'll make their damage. They'll do their damage. With Hankins, I wonder if he's going to do the same kind of deal as Poe. One-year deal, get your $6 to $8 million, and go back to free agency next year, see if you can get the big bucks.
Yeah. That seems to be the plan there. And he does move teams, Dontari Poe. He's on the Falcons now, and it's going to help them to bolster that unit, who actually, you know, played pretty well in the Super Bowl for most of the game, and then they were just out of gas, and the Patriots kind of ran and passed all over them in that fourth quarter. But in any event, they shore up that line a little bit. You can never have enough defensive linemen, right, George? It's really the old adage. It's a Bill Parcells phrase. You can really never have enough. So the Giants have – it's been their bread and butter for a really long period of time. They don't focus on the linebacker position. They make sure that they're getting in there and getting as many defensive line – quality defensive linemen as they can.
Yeah, well, the game is one of the trenches, right? Offensive line, defensive line. If you don't – you need a quarterback first and foremost. But after that, it's the lines. That's really where it goes there. Defensive line, you can go rush the quarterback and make him uncomfortable. Then you have a good chance. Obviously, the offensive line, if you can protect your quarterback, open up running lanes, there you go. So I think that is the way, in my mind, to win games as well. It's not sexy sometimes, it's not pretty, but it gets the job done. As a quarterback is by far the most important thing in the NFL. The game is just geared towards that. But after that, it's rushing the quarterback and protecting the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more, and I think we're going to see a lot as this draft approaches. And, you know, we're about 5 weeks away now, 6 weeks away from the draft. It's going to be really defensive heavy in that first round in particular. I think the quarterback, we've seen the quarterback dominoes fall, a bunch of them fall, still a few pieces left hanging. And I think it's becoming more apparent that whomever drafts these quarterbacks in the first round, aren't going to panic to do it and probably aren't going to spend much to get it. I think these quarterbacks have seen their value and where they sit in the NFL landscape, and I don't think teams are going to panic and trade up to number one and give a boatload of picks to the Browns in order to make that happen. For whomever it might be, Trubisky or Watson are really the top two. You put Kaiser third. So it seems to me that cooler heads are prevailing and teams are willing to either draft the quarterbacks later in the first round or even the second round and not necessarily bang out one of those first picks for one of those players. But, you know, it's easy to say that now. As you get close to the draft, one team will panic and try to move up to take one of these guys, don't you think?
That's all it takes is one, right? It's what we say in free agency every year. It's what we say for the draft. It only takes one. Someone might believe or someone might be desperate for a quarterback. Isn't this why we see Osweiler getting the big contract he got last year, Glennon getting the contract he got this year? Teams have to gamble at quarterback. You just have to. Because if you don't have one, you're not going anywhere. You're not going to do anything. I don't think – it certainly won't be San Fran. They'll take the number two pick and take who they want. But, you know, maybe the Jets jump up. I doubt it, but it could be a team like the Jets that jumps up or any one of a number of other teams that have issues at quarterback. You know, so I think – I don't think we're going to see the bounty – sometimes we see the big deal, you know, the multiple upon multiple picks. I think the Browns will get some offers, but it may not be, like I said, it may not be the killer deal they're hoping for. So I think that's what they're going to have to decide. Do you want to stay and take the war daddy, take the big pass rusher, Myles Garrett, if that's the number one guy, or do we trade down and instead of getting, you know, like I said, that bounty, that's maybe three, an extra one, two, and a three, maybe we're only going to get an extra one and a three. You know, something around there. So I wonder if that's what they're going to have to decide there because all these quarterbacks coming out have major, major flaws, to put it nicely. There's just nobody there yet that says, you know, draft me. There's no Andrew Luck coming out, and I think that's going to be a problem here.
Agreed. So Good stuff. George and I will continue to kind of explore free agency. I want to get into the NFL a little bit deeper and how some of the current moves have affected other players. Somebody like Malcolm Butler, how the market has sort of turned him upside down, and a few other guys that have been impacted by this. And explore the quarterback situations a little bit more, because what I think is interesting is that because of teams like the Giants, and we'll talk about this more after the break, because of teams like Giants, where George has rightfully said that they're kind of going all in with Eli having not much time left, I think they are focused on looking at the heir apparent, and I think we'll see a lot of that as we hit the draft season, not necessarily in the first round, but in rounds to come. So George and I will talk about that and a lot more for the next 3 hours on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. George and I here until 10. Going through the NFL landscape, free agency continues to impact us. Signings probably a little less headline grabbing, but still impactful. Talked about Dontari Poe. The Giants signed Geno Smith, George.
Yay!
Huge addition to their squad. I actually did find that kind of curious, but you know, the Giants are in need of depth behind Eli. Not that he ever misses a snap, but they're not really, you know, they weren't really happy with Ryan Nassib, and he certainly was not going to be a guy that was going to take over for Eli at any point, nor will Geno. Just kind of a holding place, but safe to say Geno isn't going to be back with the Jets. So that depth chart,
I'm sure they're crushed.
On that the depth chart on that team at QB, you want to talk about thin. Got some problems there. What do you suspect that the Jets will do?
Listen, there's a lot of suspicion that the Jets are looking to tank this season and go for the quarterback next year. That's the
do you agree with that?
They are ripping it down, right? I think it's the right move, mind you. I think you know, teams have to do this probably more often than they actually do. It's tough to do in New York because they're going to get ripped apart this season. You know, they'll get destroyed in the press here. I don't know if Todd Bowles will be he'll make it next year. I don't know if he'll be around to worry about this. I'm sure he still wants to win, but the upper manager doesn't seem to want to. And you got rid of Marshall. You know, that's already that. You don't have a quarterback. You know, you don't really have a tight end. You know, Eric Decker, I think he's probably next on the list as soon as he's cleared. You know, Mangold's gone. You know, maybe Revis gone. Not that he was good anyway, but you see what they're doing here. If you make money, good chance you're going bye-bye. And they're not like they're making big-time signs in free agency here. So, and Morris Claiborne, okay, good luck with that. You know, like I said, I think the Jets are doing the right thing. They're tearing it down, but this may be a bad team for a few years.
Yeah, I do think they're tanking. You know, it's the Browns and the Niners basically got away with it last year. You hear guys like Bill Polian say that he thinks it's a problem, but the NFL isn't doing anything about it. So, since there's no ramifications for tanking, teams are just going to continue to do it and try to move up in the draft. Now, the Browns aren't even going to get a quarterback out of it in the first round necessarily this year, at least at the number one overall pick. But, you know, they've accumulated some picks, and they have some leverage at the moment. Building it from the ground up seems to be what the Jets are doing. Really, there's only a couple of big contracts left, really. It's Decker, Mo Wilkerson, and then that's really it. Like, you don't have any bank-breaking contracts outside of that. You know, I've heard them say a number of times that Leonard Williams is really the only untradeable asset on the entire team, who's a future star defensive lineman, and he was in 2015, I think, number six overall pick. And they've been really happy with his play, obviously. So, you know, the best way to tank is the manner in which they are doing it and the way in which the Browns are doing it. It's going to frustrate the hell out of the coaches, but there isn't enough talent to win enough games here. They're not going to, like, surprise people and end up winning 10 games. It won't happen. They can't. They don't have enough talent. They don't have enough depth of talent on
this roster
in order to make things happen. Yeah,
so you got to say, they don't have a quarterback. It doesn't matter about the rest of the team. They don't have a quarterback.
Right. It's Bryce Petty and Christian Hackenberg are really the only ones of note that are on that roster these days. They've shown Hackenberg so much promise as a second-round pick last year that there were still leaks coming out of that building later in the year that he wasn't ready to play. And that's fine. He's a developmental quarterback. They picked him in the second round, though. He better show some signs this year of knowing what to do out there. I've never been a fan of spread quarterbacks, and that's a system in which Bryce Petty played, so I don't really see him having an NFL future personally. He can throw it, but those system quarterbacks in college can put up some nice numbers, and Bryce Petty doesn't really have tons of experience at the college level either. He was a backup for several years there. So I can see them taking a quarterback. I just don't see them necessarily taking one of these guys in the first round.
Yeah, it's a tough sixth overall. I mean, I think the Jets are going to trade. I think they're going to look for more picks. You mentioned there's not much talent here. Only way to get talent, if you're not going to go bananas in free agency, which the Jets have not done, would be to accumulate draft picks. You sort of are playing for the future anyway, so you're not really going for this year. So you got a couple years to get these guys ready to play, or at least play up to their capabilities. So I think it does make sense. And you mentioned, Bill Polian wants the NFL to stop this. How do you stop this? And really, how would you stop it? How do you force a team to sign? Who wants to say you're the player you want them to sign is the right player for them? We got every 4 years, each team is checked as far as minimum salary cap compliance. Unfortunately, that 4 years has just started again this year. So that's one way of doing it, to make sure they're spending enough money. But the Jets don't have to worry about that until 2021 or 2020. So, I don't know what you want the NFL to do to stop this. You mentioned Major League Baseball. They've let it go. We see this over and over again. It is one way to build your team.
The salary cap floor was really the checks and balances that they put into place, and that's being adhered to by teams. So what can you do? Obviously, you can strip draft picks if teams don't comply to that, but there is some competitive checks and balances in there. These teams are just figuring out a way around it. You know what I mean? People are always going to figure out how to bend rules or sort of work within the rules framework in order to gain an advantage. Like, the Patriots are really expert level at that kind of stuff. Whether it's on the field or off the field, they push the boundaries as to what may or may not be considered legal or within the context of the rules. Obviously, Spygate and all that kind of stuff, it comes back to bite them. But at the same time, remember that Ravens playoff game where they were switching guys in and out and offensive linemen were receivers and running backs were offensive linemen, etc. Teams are always looking to get an edge, and I think this is just another example of teams that are tanking are just looking to get a little bit of an edge, and it is within the rules, so what can you do?
Yeah, seriously, what do you want the Jets? Even if the Jets try to sign people, now they go from a 3-win team to a 5-win team? Does that make a difference? The other ones, like I said, they're playing New York, they're going to eat it. They're going to be a bad team. They're going to hear it from the media. They're going to hear it from the fans, and that's something they're going to have to deal with. I imagine there'll be a complete...
On that front, though, sorry to interrupt, but on that front, if you're a Jets fan with an understanding of football that you have, and some fans are knowledgeable as well, wouldn't you think as a Jets fan, well, this is the right move. We're just going to keep banging our head against the ball to try to go 8-8. Shouldn't we just strip it down and start over?
That would be the logical fan. But most fans aren't logical. They're going to be angry at the lack of moves, without no quarterback. And if it's just another quarterback, it's going to be, oh, you took a quarterback last year, and now we can take another one this year. How'd you make that mistake last year? It's a waste of a second round. You see where it's all going to go. I think the most important thing is this regime won't be there. Because no matter what happens, even if ownership has signed off on this, it's still going to come down to, Bowles has had a 2-14 record, 3-13, 4-12, whatever they go this year. It's not going to be good. Right, so they're going to get crushed. And so that's why it's tough on the coach, because he needs to win now to keep his job. And the general manager may be in the same spot, even though he's doing the right thing long term.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if this is a plan, I don't see how you could possibly blame Todd Bowles for anything. I mean, Chip Kelly got blamed, but it's fair to say that the Niners are pretty dysfunctional. Now, if I had a functional and a dysfunctional bucket in the NFL world, the Jets would be in that dysfunctional bucket too. But if this is an organizational plan that Maccagnan and Bowles are executing, then I don't really see I would prefer some stability from the head coach. If you don't like the guy, the job that the guy is doing, obviously you got to get rid of him. But you can't blame him for not winning. I don't blame Chip Kelly one bit for not winning last year, right? It was a plan to not to try to get high draft picks.
You can't fire a coach after 1 year. That's ridiculous. We all know he needs time to get his players in there, get his system in there. Now, I don't like Kelly and how he works his system. I don't like it at all. I don't think he'll ever work in the NFL. But to fire after one season is a joke. I mean, come on. How many coaches come in and automatically everything turns around, everything's roses? He had to tell them, listen, it's going to take me a couple of years here. I got to get rid of the players that now aren't going to fit my system. It's going to take some time. You know, that's why, same thing with the Jets. If I'm the Jets and I'm stripping it down like I am, I would hope a GM went to, went to Woody Johnson and said, listen, I'll do this, but it's going to take a couple of years. I got to know I'm going to have a job. If not, yeah. I'm not going to do this. Right? I'm going to try and win now to save my job. That's why it's all human nature as well comes into this. You know, if you're going to strip it down, you have to feel pretty confident that you're going to have a job 2-3 years down the line. Because if you're not, really, what's the point?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any way that Maccagnan and Bowles, when they took the job, thought that this was going to be the route they had to go. I think they saw things go south in 1 year and just decided, you know what, we don't have the players we want in here. Let's just build it from the ground up, and we'll get started on drafting the guys that we really want instead of piecing it together with older wide receivers and guys that are hitting free agency. We're just going to let them walk and move on with our day. The Chip Kelly thing, the only thing that ever surprised me about that is that he took the job. I know the Niners probably seemed interested in him at the time, but he had to have looked at that roster and said, man, I don't really have a lot to work with here. If I'm him, I don't think I would have taken it. There would have been better opportunities. Jim Tomsula may not be head coaching material, but he also didn't have a lot to work with. So it's just one of those situations for coaches where I don't really see them taking the blame. I don't really blame Todd Bowles for what happened to the Jets this past season, and I certainly won't blame him for anything that happens here outside of them just melting down on a regular basis.
I agree, but we all know what's going to happen. Someone's got to take the blame.
The problem is like the owner's going to feel all this heat, right, from media, from the fans, and all that kind of stuff, and he'll probably end up capitulating to that and canning the guy undeservedly.
Yeah, that's generally what happens here. The owner's not going to want. This is why Roger Goodell takes all the beating as well. Owners don't want to hear it. So someone's got to take the blame for them. For the NFL owners, it's generally Goodell. And when a team plays badly, it's the coach. Possibly the GM, maybe both. But generally, the coach is the one that's going to get it. Especially when, let's face it, Todd guy, he came close last year. They almost got rid of him. They decided to hold on to him at the end. As the Jets go on 3-13, I am 100% behind you, Mike. I don't think it'll be his fault at all. I don't think he makes it through, though.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. So, okay, we'll continue to talk a little bit more about free agency. I want to talk a little bit about the Malcolm Butler situation, him seemingly in a situation to sign with the Saints. So talk a little bit about him and some other free agent moves in the NFL this past week. It's Mike and George back after this. We're back talking NFL free agency. Thanks for joining us this morning. It's the Slow Jams segment, 7:30 Slow Jams segment. Hopefully you are nursing your St. Patrick's Day hangover by listening to us yammer on about NFL free agency and impending baseball drafts. And feel free to hit us up with any questions. Tweet at us at FNTSY Radio. You can hit us up with a phone call at 84FNTSY. I would say, regarding your baseball drafts, at therotoexperts.com, exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package for 2017 is here. So stay ahead of the competition with in-depth articles and insights from our award-winning analysts. Prepare for your draft with our new and improved cheat sheet generator. Get access to fully sortable projections and over 800 player profiles. Sorry, we didn't go that deep. 800 player profiles. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount on the rotoexperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball Package. Good articles in there. George is the closer report guy. You contribute anything else in the exclusive Edge package this year, George, outside of the closer report?
Basics on how to win your league.
Say that again?
A basic column on how to win your league.
Oh, how to win. Okay. All right. So read that and you'll be good to go, right? Just read George's article and we can guarantee victory.
Like I said, right? It's just the basics on how to get and I said not really in an expert league, more of your home league, and how to get ahead of your competition.
Yeah, the one thing I've noticed, and we'll get back to NFL free agency in a moment, but the one thing I have noticed in the mock drafts I've been doing is that it seems like a lot of people are listening to experts. Like, the starting pitching is flying off the board in these mocks that I'm doing. I try to avoid those mocks that are completely, like, computer-generated, where I'm the only real person in there or one of only two real people in there. But I have noticed that. You know, the people are making sure that they get those couple of starting pitchers early. So if you wait, you don't even have to wait too long before that has an impact on you.
Yeah, for me, I've changed over the years. You know, 10 years ago, I was probably grabbing one starting pitcher in the first 5-6 rounds. Now I'm almost certainly taking a starting pitcher in the second round, maybe the third, depending on how that falls out and where I pick in the second round. And I'll probably have two in the first five, two in the first six at the very latest. Starting pitching has become more dominant over the years. We can all speculate as to why that might be, but it's become more dominant. Everyone seems to throw 95 to 97 miles an hour nowadays. You need your strikeouts. So it's although starting pitching is deep, it's deeper by far than any other position, but still you need the aces. You need the top-tier starters to really compete. I'm a big believer now, Mike, in taking two. I want two aces out of my top five picks.
Yep. Yeah, I'm absolutely going in with that mentality as well. So I would thank you for that, because I don't know that I was so focused on it. I mean, in my keeper league, I'm always keeping the two pitchers anyway. So I try to keep the two pitchers, but last year I only kept one, and it hurt me pretty significantly, because the guy that I kept was Matt Harvey. You know, trying to piece it together with so many other starting pitchers had been kept, it just didn't work out. When the one guy that I kept was Harvey, and he got injured, it was a disaster for me. So, in any event, that's one thing I've noticed, and we'll talk more baseball at the top of the hour. But what I did want to talk about is a team that probably people are sick of hearing about, frankly, but it's the New England Patriots, George. And what we see here, and it's just... You know, you say it every week. Everybody else is playing checkers, and the Patriots are playing chess. Like, it's unbelievable what's going to happen here with Malcolm Butler. They make the trade with the Saints and give up the first-round pick, the last pick in the first round. It's part of the Brandon Cooks trade. And then Malcolm Butler is going to sign with the Saints, and they're going to get a first-round pick back.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The Saints aren't going to sign to an offer sheet, because that would make them have to trade their 11th overall pick. They're going to try and work out a deal with New England. I have a funny feeling they'll say, hey, we'll sign him. You give us, we'll give you our second round pick. And of course, New England's going to come back. No, you want your first overall pick. And then the compromise would seem to be, okay, we'll give you back the 32nd pick that we got for Brandon Cooks. I imagine that's what it's going to be. I guess there could be another pick involved in there somewhere. But that seems to make the most sense. New Orleans wants Malcolm Butler. New England doesn't seem to mind losing him, and they'll get their pick back. I guess it works out for everybody.
Yeah, it's just... You know, they are so dedicated, and they're not the only team that's doing this. So, listen, I'll pat them on the back, because they're having a tremendous offseason, and they're really dedicated to what they're willing to pay. Like, everybody's got a price, and they don't really waver from that. You know, Julian Edelman is on a 4-year, $17 million deal. Think about that. Think about the production that he's had and what he's getting paid. By the way, his deal is up. This is the last year of that 4-year deal, and he'll be hitting free agency. And it just has the looks to me that since Cooks is here, they could be looking for Cooks, who's still under his rookie deal. They'll just use Cooks for the next couple of years, potentially extend him, and then Edelman will be walking, and they'll continue to use other guys that they've signed. You know, Rex Burkhead comes in, making that New England Patriots backfield situation as nebulous as it is every single year, George. They have more weapons now than they've ever had, but for fantasy purposes, with the exception of Tom Brady, I don't know that this is a great thing. We're going to like Edelman and Cooks, but don't you think Edelman's numbers probably go down?
You have to think that, sure. I mean, once again, you got a legitimate threat. And Cooks are almost, you could make an argument that Edelman is really Cooks light. You know, and Cooks will run more deeper patterns. It's going to be an offense. that's going to be better, a better NFL office than a fantasy office, because you try and pick and choose who's going to be that guy each week. But that's what we always do with Belichick. Who's the guy? Is it going to be Gronk that week? Is it a tight end heavy? Is it wide receiver heavy? Is it running back heavy? Is it a James White and Deion Lewis throw hit the backside of the backfield type of day? If they get a workhorse running back, another LeGarrette Blount type, is it going to be a power running game that day? Belichick doesn't care about anybody. If Cooks was upset last year about not getting the ball at times in New Orleans, wait till New England, when you're not even in the game plan some weeks because it doesn't require those kind of passes. So it's going to be very intriguing to see how Cooks handles it as well, how quickly he becomes, I guess, accustomed to the Belichick way.
Yeah, I mean, their depth chart right now is Hogan, Edelman, Cooks, Malcolm Mitchell. I don't know what the latest is Danny Amendola. Is Danny Amendola on the market right now, or is he still under contract? That's the only guy I have to double-check on. But in any event, you have those guys. They signed, they trade for Dwayne Allen. They got Gronk there. Like, imagine if everybody is healthy, George. Like, we're never going to be able to figure this out week after week. We have a hard enough. We had a hard enough time doing it, but we could just rely on Edelman, especially after Gronk got injured. But if Gronk is healthy and Dwayne Allen and Cooks and Edelman and Hogan and Mitchell, we'll never be able to get this right.
Yeah, it's not going to be any fun.
And Burkhead. I forgot Burkhead.
Right, and that was
another guy catching passes.
Another strange signing for me. He's sort of the same it's just depth there. Yeah, the depth is incredible there. As for Amendola, by the way, he's still signed, but he's probably going to take a pay cut to remain with the team. Not like they're dying for another fifth overall wide receiver making the money he's making. He's signed for one more year at about 4.25. So I would think they're going to ask him to take a cut there, and either he'll take it or he'll be gone. That's just the way it works with New England there. Each Sunday trying to figure out what to do. Outside of Gronk and outside of Brady, probably Amendola. Probably Edelman in PPR leagues. Good luck with everybody else. And you're going to start Cooks as well, but I don't think he's a wide receiver one anymore because of what we're talking about here. That's going to be weeks where he's not in the game plan here. I'm going to have him as a high-end wide receiver too.
Yeah, it's just I think that's the bummer of all of this. They're going to have their – I mean, this is going to be – on paper, this is going to be one of the best Patriots offenses ever. I mean, going into next year, just the depth. And I know some of the players that we mentioned – don't jump off the page and shock you with how great they are. But we've seen them play in these roles, and they're great. Rex Burkhead, it was like, you know, I'm reading this article earlier this week, and the writer referred to it as like an inevitability of Rex Burkhead ending up in New England because of his skill set. They love players like this, guys that are versatile. We see it with White, we see it with Lewis, and now we're going to see it with Burkhead. Those versatile backs, you know, LeGarrette Blount played a particular role, but they really like the backs that can kind of do it all, and it doesn't matter who it happens to be. It started with Kevin Faulk years ago, and they continue to pile up guys that can kind of do everything.
Yeah, I mean, they're deep all over. This is a much better NFL offense than fantasy one, because we're going to be playing a lot of guessing games here, but they're going to be able to do almost whatever they want to do. Brady stays healthy. It's going to be a nightmare. And he's the only person that right now that needs to stay healthy. You know, they proved they can win without Gronk. I think they can win without Cooks or Edelman. You know, they can't maybe not survive without multiples. If, three wide receivers to go down, they'd certainly be in trouble. But even if one of these running backs, White, Lewis, Burkhart, they'll be okay. They'll just move on. It is the New England way. It's the Belichick way. I think what we're all seeing is they realize that Brady can't play forever, so they're going to try and win as many bowls now as they possibly can.
Yeah, other sort of impacts in free agency, and we talked about the offensive line situation, George, and how there's a dearth of players out there that are available. And unfortunately, the Bengals' offensive line, which wasn't very good last year, lost its two best offensive linemen in longtime Bengals veteran Andrew Whitworth and right guard Kevin Zeitler. They take off during free agency, and we're going to see what they have to do. 2015 selections Cedric Ogbuehe, that's a tough one, and Jake Fisher had mixed results last season. So Dalton was sacked 41 times last year. And I just wonder if the Bengals are one of these teams that they miss their window and it's going to start to look pretty ugly for Andy Dalton pretty soon.
I mean, their offensive line is not good. It's not terrible. It's not the Minnesota Vikings of last season. So I don't know if I want to quite go that far. But listen, most teams don't have a good O-line, right? Very few teams have a Cowboys and Raiders, maybe a couple of teams have great offensive lines. After that, we have a whole bunch of teams that are okay, they're okay. Then a couple of teams that are bad, as in Minnesota. Then most other teams are below average. It's just the way it is in the NFL nowadays. And offenses have to adjust. Like I said, quicker passes, establish that running game, max protect, keep your running backs in, chip the rushes, whatever you got to do. I don't think teams are doing enough of that. So many of these teams, they want to put out 4 and 5 wide receivers in the patterns, right? They want to throw this ball all over the place, take advantage of the rules, and I get that. But you're getting a quarterback killed.
Agreed. So, you know, it's another team that's been impacted. We'll continue to talk about how these shifting free agents have impacted other teams and look at the fantasy implications of those moves after this. George and I back in a couple. Back talking NFL free agency, its impact on the fantasy landscape. George, I guess really the biggest free agent news this week was, again, with the Patriots when they signed back Dante Hightower. You know, their approach is tried and true, and they're happy to let a player shop his wares if he feels like he can get more money elsewhere. But I think they knew what the price was for Dante Hightower. And he ended up coming back to them. The Steelers gave him a take-it-or-leave-it offer. If he left the building, then he wasn't going to be a Steeler, and he did just that. And the Jets celebrated his birthday with them and had Dante Hightower cupcakes and all this good stuff. And their initial offer was up to $62.5 million over 5 years. However, they gave him a physical. This is according to Pro Football Talk. After the physical, it became clear that the total dollars and the guarantees wouldn't ultimately get to the point where Hightower would accept it. So they didn't drop out, but they were concerned. So it seems like there is some concern over the long-term health of Dante Hightower, but I don't think the Pats seem to care. They signed him for a good deal, and it's good really for them, and good for Hightower too. He gets some guarantees, and he's got some a little bit of long-term security. So good for him, but it is just amazing that I sort of felt all along that they didn't want to lose a player like this, but I guess the money was out there where they could have done so.
What hasn't worked out for New England? I mean, really, what has they sort of they let him test the market. You know, he goes to Pittsburgh, goes to the Jets, finds his market, and still comes back to New England. Okay, sounds good. We'll give that to you. You know, we don't want to lose you. It's just amazing. I said, I heard the same thing about the Jets you heard. They found something in the physical. They didn't like it, so they rejected the offer. How true that is, anyone's guess there. But another, you know, top player comes back to New England. And I get it. Listen, I don't know about you. I would take a couple of million less to stay with New England, a team that I know is going to win year in and year out and play for that organization, an organization I know I can play for that I'm comfortable in. I think it makes all the sense in the world. So I don't blame him at all, even if that's not true. And he just said no to the Jets. You know, and he's just trying to, maybe he's using the Jets to pump up the New England's price. Whatever it might be, don't blame it all. That's the way the game is played in the NFL. So, like I said, the rich just get richer here.
Yeah, you know, if the money was considerable, I think you'd have to leave New England, especially if you do have physical concerns about yourself. You know, if you're being honest with yourself and think that, you know, I may not have 5 years left. Or I may never get to free agency again. I think you'd have to consider leaving. But it's a comfortable place if they like you, you know what I mean? They are very cutthroat about moving on from players. But at the same time, if Hightower can be in the same conversation as a Teddy Bruschi, then you know that he can be a guy that's kind of legendary, right? He's taken over the Gerard Mayo role. Gerard Mayo really had to retire due to injuries, and he's taken over that role. And again, as you said, if you're comfortable and producing in that defense and there's a mutual sense of trust in that building, you're in good graces, right? Obviously, they move on from players that have been historically great. Like, I was listening to another show earlier this week, and they're saying people thought he was nuts when he wouldn't give Adam Vinatieri a couple of hundred grand extra just to keep him around. And he goes out and he drafts another kicker, and the guy's been great. Is he quite Vinatieri? No, but he's been better than Vinatieri for part of his time with the Patriots, right?
He did have some Gostkowski did have some problems with some extra points last year.
This was the first year that Gostkowski showed some cracks in the foundation. I would agree, but the previous 5 years have been stellar.
Yeah, no, Gostkowski's been great. They haven't really lost much there, and I love Vinatieri, but they haven't lost really anything in Gostkowski. But it really tells you what Belichick is. He has an idea of how much money a certain player or a certain position should get. You go over that, he's moving on. We've seen this over and over again. Chandler Jones, that's why you're one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, no longer on the Patriots. For whatever reason, he didn't think that player or that position was worth that kind of money.
Yeah, so moving on to other players in free agency. It's a good article on NFL.com about how teams are impacted and what's the collateral damage of these free agency moves. We talked a little bit about the New England fantasy landscape and how that's going to be difficult to navigate next year. But moving down the list, the Giants now have like basically an embarrassment of riches themselves at the receiving core. With Odell, now Brandon Marshall comes in here on, as you said earlier, a sweetheart deal. It really is a crazy deal that he signed. I'm not so sure the market would have been pounding down his door, but he took less than I expected, and he jumped on it quick. You know, he was early to sign in free agency. But in any event, that's now Odell Beckham, Brandon Marshall, and Sterling Shepard. So what would you suspect would happen here, and is Sterling Shepard negatively impacted in a big way?
Oh, he is. I mean, the first thing I thought was, man, if you own Shepard in a keeper or a dynasty league, you were not happy about this. Because let's face it, he was going to be the number two there behind Beckham. Beckham getting all the coverage, all the double coverage, all the safety over the top, was one-on-one for Shepard pretty much all season long. It was going to pay off big time. And now you have Marshall, and guess what? A lot of that goes away. I think Marshall is someone I would believe right now if he said that I signed just because I wanted to win and not for the money. I believe Marshall. I think that's exactly what he did. You know, he's never made the playoffs. Think about it. All the teams he's been with, and that really tells you something about him, that a lot of teams couldn't wait to get rid of him. Denver, Miami, Chicago, keeps going all over the place. But I think he does want to win, wants to make the playoffs for the first time. So I get it. You know, it doesn't bother me. You know, he probably has more money than he knows what to do with. Not playing for money anymore. He's playing to win. And the Giants, with all the moves they've made, I'd say they're the best team in the NFC East, right? I mean, I don't know if I'm going to – they'll be right there with Green Bay as far as overall. Atlanta, Seattle, I think those are probably still the top four teams in the NFC.
Yeah, and you got two teams like the Panthers and Arizona who are coming off bad seasons, but overall pretty talented rosters. If they can tweak a couple of things and get it figured out, you would suspect that they'll challenge for wild card spots as well. You didn't mention Dallas in there as the best team in the NFC East. Do you think it's going to be sort of a two-team race next year?
Well, with the Cowboys, you know, they don't have a secondary right now, right? And literally, they don't have a secondary. They're all gone. So I know they
Church and Claiborne left in free agency, right?
So did Carr. Church is in Jacksonville. Yeah. Claiborne Jets. Carr went to Baltimore. So literally, they need some cornerback and safety help there. Not that these guys were great to begin with. You know, they also lost two starting members of their offensive line. That hurts for what was the best line in football. It might still be. They still have the three big pieces. But Leary went to Denver. Doug Free retired. And I understand fans think Doug Free is a turnstile. Well, the Cowboys don't have a ready replacement at right tackle for him. So that's going to be interesting to see if Collins can...
What about Lyle Collins, the kid that they signed out of LSU?
Just said that, Mike. If Collins can move out there, but the Cowboys don't really believe that's his position of the future. They think he's more of a guard than a tackle. But they're going to have to try some of these guys out there. And don't be surprised if Dallas drafts another offensive lineman in the draft. It won't be a first-round pick. It might not be a first one, two, or three pick, but they will take an offensive lineman at some point during this draft.
Yeah. And back to the Giants, you know, Sterling Shepard, people loved him going into this year. And I think for a rookie, 65 catches for 683 yards and 8 touchdowns on the 105 targets, you know, that's really good production. I think at some points during the year, people got frustrated, but you have to look at the totality of the body of work. You know, he had a good season for a rookie. He throws up a bagel against Cleveland, but you know, that isn't it isn't something that you can get angry about over the course of the season. If you drafted him into a keeper league, you would have been happy with that production as a rookie wide receiver. But now, I mean, would you expect those same numbers? Like, are the Giants going to be throwing to the point where he can still get that number of catches and he can throw Brandon Marshall another 75 balls in this offense? Is that, you think there's enough pass attempts to go around?
Well, I think we need to know about the running game first. Can Paul Perkins make that dangerous, or do they have to throw because they can't move the ball on the ground? You know, I think that's going to be interesting. Do they end up getting a decent tight end in there? Someone else could steal catches there? I don't think so. I don't think so in either case. I think Perkins is a better running back than what we maybe he's been given credit for, and where he's going in early drafts, and yes, there are people who have drafted early already. I like Perkins. I think he could be a running back too there, where people are drafting him more as an afterthought right now. So I think the Giants' offense is going to be good. For me, it'll come down to that offensive line. Can Eli get three and a half, 4 seconds to throw the ball down the field? If he can, that's going to be very difficult to stop.
I agree. I do think that offensive line is going to continue to struggle, but perhaps their consistency of having these players in there for a while will allow them to play a little bit better. Consistency in the offensive line tends to be a big factor in how these guys play well together. So that's it for NFL free agency for now. We got Matt Modica joining us in a couple of minutes for hour number two. We're going to talk some baseball, World Baseball Classic, spring training news. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. We're the Roto Experts in the Morning, Mike and George, and Matt Modica back with us after the break.